For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea. So Goldberg's out again. I think he's doing like college tour with his son, Gage. I think Gage is getting pretty close to trying to figure out what he's going to do. And if he's, I think he's going to have to decide soon if he's going to really want to play baseball or football. But we know he's going to play something. But anyway, that's what's going on there. But happy to welcome back Brad Fanshawe. It's my co-host from Shift and Steer and owner of Bond Speed Wheels and a number of other things. You can follow him all over Instagram as well. We'll plug those accounts. Brad, how you doing?
Doing great. How about yourself, man? I mean, appreciate you having me back. It's always fun to come on and, try and fill those big biceps that Goldberg has, you know?
Yeah. Things have been good. Things have been a little hectic. As I told you guys last week, we did the Bronco Raptor off rodeo. Did a quick trip to Vegas, drove the Bronco Raptor. And if you guys didn't catch that one, you can go back and listen to it. We did like 2 hours of off-roading until we got to the high speed destination track, sort of this ultra four track that they built out for the Bronco Raptors, and was able to really kind of open it up in the dirt and hit the jumps and hit the whoops and get that thing airborne. And it was fun. So we're back here for a couple days. And then as we wrap this, I'm going to be heading to Irwindale Speedway for a 2-day program with the new Mustang. We're going to spend about a half a day or so with the new 24 Mustang EcoBoost and then the Mustang GT. I don't know exactly what they have prepared for us, but it's at Irwindale, and Irwindale to me usually means drifting or drag racing or both. So, and I know you've been out there a million times, Brad.
Yeah, Irwindale. That's what they have. They've got the track and they've got the drag strip. But the real big question, Matt, is how hot was it in the desert outside of Vegas for the off-road Bronco thing?
Yeah, so we got into that last week. So it was 116 degrees. But credit to the Bronco, like, we fired those Bronco Raptors up. There was about 15 of them, and everybody had their own Raptor. We fired them up in the morning and didn't turn them off until we returned them at the end of the day. So everything we did, high speed, low speed, off-roading, big clouds of dirt with the people going, you know, in front of you, stopping, taking a break, taking photos, just leave the car running the whole time, leave the truck running the whole time. The air worked great. There was no heating issues. They really put a lot of time into making sure those things were going to be able to handle being off-road and handle that kind of heat and kind of overdo it. Because if you add more gear and you're adding more weight, it's a little bit harder on the vehicle. So they did a pretty good job with that. And then I don't know why, but we had already planned a little bit of a few days off in Vegas. So I went to Vegas for the Bronco off rodeo, came back here, did some more podcasts, and then went back. We drove back out to Vegas.
Of course you did.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was mostly staying inside.
You couldn't get enough of the 116 degree heat. That's
Gosh. We went out there for a Sammy Hagar concert. Sammy Hagar in the Circle is Michael Anthony and Sammy Hagar and, Vic Johnson and Jason Bonham. Which I haven't seen those guys play live. Yeah, I don't know why I haven't seen those guys play live. I guess I've seen Mikey play some stuff like SEMA and whatever. Like I've seen Mikey play with Billy Gibbons and whatnot. But I haven't seen Sammy play, so it was fun to just go over there. Also, it was fun to like sit inside in the theater and watch them play instead of anything outdoors in that heat.
Yes, anything air conditioned at that time.
Anything air conditioned. So that being said, we did this this trip to Vegas, and we took it as an opportunity to try out another vehicle. We grabbed the Toyota Sequoia, and Sequoia hasn't really been updated in, I don't know, it seems like a decade.
It's been a long time. I mean, that particular, it really needed an uplift, didn't it?
It did. So, it's the big SUV. It's three row. They did quite a bit of an overhaul on it. And it worked flawlessly. So, but gone is the V8 that it used to have, which the V8 was 381 horsepower. And now it's been replaced by a 3.4 liter twin turbo V6, but it's kind of a hybrid system. It has an electric motor, and it's basically the same setup that's in the new Tundras. It has an electric motor, so the total power is 437 now, so up from 381 to 437, and the fuel economy is significantly improved between that engine, the hybrid setup, and now the 10-speed automatic, where the old one was a 6-speed. That was pretty antiquated.
Well, and the old one, which always amazed me, it had worse fuel mileage than a Tahoe or a Ford Explorer. Yeah. It was like the worst in the class, and now they've given it gobs of torque as well.
So I think it was a few months ago, maybe kind of around New Year's, when I did the trip to Arizona and to the Vegas and back, and we did it in the Lexus, and we did off-roading in the Lexus that had the V8 in it. Mm-hmm. And plenty of power, and it was great. But yeah, it is not gentle on the wallet when it comes to driving that thing. Now, that being said, the Toyota Sequoia still is a pretty thirsty vehicle. Toyota has it rated at 22 highway. The drive from here to Vegas, most of that is a pretty high speed limit, 70 yeah. or so. So you can scoot along pretty good. I only saw about 17 miles per gallon average, but that includes, leaving LA, going through LA, and the ride there and the ride back. So I saw about 17 average. And they had like one of the lanes closed off on the way out to Vegas. That's caused
always miserable.
It was like an hour and 15 minute delay. But it got me thinking again, coming right off of the Bronco off rodeo, was we're sitting there for an hour and 15 minutes, creeping at 4 miles an hour in back to back traffic. It's 115 degrees out. You're on the hot asphalt, and I'm seeing cars start to pull off the road because some are getting too hot and, they're just not making it. And this thing worked great. When you look at the design of this vehicle and you're like, I just don't know about the giant, this massive front grill, that's like on the Tundra. But when you're sitting in traffic going nowhere in 115 degrees in the middle of the desert, you go, I get it. The grill is functional now. I mean, they got enough air going through that thing to keep the engine, the AC going the whole time. This one was equipped with the cooled seats, front and second row. So the front row seats, the second row seats, which is great because we had the dogs with us, and I can reach back, turn the seat coolers on, and they sit on the seat. They get their little undercarriage cooled off on those cooled seats. So the Sequoia now with the V6 power and the hybrid power has increased towing capacity as well. The increase is over 2,000 pounds. It now tows 9,520 pounds. which is pretty significant. And it scoots along pretty quickly. It's 0 to 60 in 5.6 seconds. I don't know that there's much in this category that's quicker than that, other than maybe like the Ford Expedition has like a performance package version, the Stealth Performance, I believe. That's probably a little faster. I didn't get a chance to try the all-wheel drive system, but if it's anything like what we've seen from Toyota, what we experienced with the Lexus, I think it's going to be pretty good.
How was the interior on it? How was the, you know, the trim and everything?
Yeah, so it was good. It kind of falls into this area of, on an entry-level Sequoia, it feels pretty good. But once you start getting into the higher end, like the Capstone version, you're like, nah, now it kind of feels like a little too much plastic. But there's kind of a balance there. It's not bad. It worked out fine for us. And it worked out, you know, the infotainment system, it's got a 14-inch touchscreen. It's got plenty of storage space. With the case on my phone, there was like a charging pad and it kept charging and not charging and charging and not charging, kind of bouncing back and forth. I just think it's like a little not strong enough to get through probably most, if not some of the iPhone cases. If it was just the phone without it, it's just something to think about, like the sensitivity of those things.
Well, you don't want too much radiation in the cab with you.
Yeah, but I don't. It could have been like a little bit stronger.
Yeah.
As far as the driving, you know, this still has the live axle in the rear, where a lot of the modern SUVs are going to an independent rear. That with the hybrid system, the braking was a little weird, and because of the amount of body roll and nose dive on it, as I was driving, I found Tammy in the passenger seat, like always like leaning forward and like putting her hand on the dash. I just noticed that the weight of this vehicle, the brakes were very soft and I had to give it more effort, and then it would kind of grab and really kind of nosedive. And I noticed her doing it a lot. And she's like, "What's up with this vehicle?" And I realized that there was something with the braking that just didn't feel right.
Are you sure she didn't say first, "Why are you driving like that?"
Yeah, that was the first thing. Yeah. She looked at me and I'm like, "It's not me. I know that look. It's not me." So once we came back, we pulled some numbers on it, and some of the tests were showing that it does not rank among the best when it comes from 60 to zero. It was about 134 feet. And there's been some competitors in its class that are stopping, you know, 10, 15 feet better. So
yeah,
I would like to have seen better braking and a nicer pedal with a little firmer pedal. It's a little squishy. But you know, that being said, the Toyota was fantastic. It ran well. They do pipe in some engine noise into the cabin through the stereo speakers. So when you get on the vehicle, you're like, this thing sounds pretty good. And you realize it's not real, but yeah. Oh, and then the other thing I noticed was, because we were sitting in the traffic and just kind of creeping forward, you know, between 4 miles an hour and, you know, 24 miles an hour, it shuts down the gas engine with that start stop feature. But with the electric motor, it will sort of creep forward. So it's a little less it's a little more integrated, less noticeable with the start stop. But when it's that hot out and it's trying to keep the air conditioning on, but also trying to shut down the motor, I noticed that when we were stuck in that traffic and creeping forward, it seemed like it couldn't figure out if it wanted the engine or not. It kept shutting off the engine and starting it and shutting it and starting it and shutting it, and starting it, like within seconds. You know, yeah. It was just like, if you counted to 10, it probably would have done it 4 times. And I was just like, what's going on with this thing? It can't be that good. And I kept looking for the button to turn off the start stop, but I don't think you can. Maybe it's deep into the settings of the vehicle, but But I don't think you can, because it's switching. It's not just shutting the motor and then restarting it. It's switching to the hybrid technology with the electric motor. But the electric motor didn't have enough, because it kept trying to keep the air conditioning on.
Right.
Right.
You spin those electric motors so hard just to get the AC going, you know. It's
yeah. So that, there was a little bit of a flaw there. But like I guess if you sit in a lot of traffic and it's over 100 degrees out, you'll probably be able to reproduce whatever was going on with the vehicle that I was driving.
And so basically there's a few things to dial in. That happens with every new generation. You know, there's things, as long as it's not major, you know, it's
yeah. Now you're going to expect to pay about $80,000 for kind of a fully loaded version of this truck. So it's not cheap. But you know, it's fully capable and it seems tough. And you do get the reputation and the durability of Toyota. But anyway, it was good to drive. It was fun to drive. Yeah, by the way, it says combined range of 450 miles on the specs. I'm not really seeing that either. I didn't really see what it was giving me. Now, granted, it was hot and it was the AC's cranked up the whole time, but I got about 309 miles of range with a full tank of gas. And it charges the battery.
Well, you were in extreme conditions.
Yeah. And I wasn't getting 20 miles per gallon. So anyway, what's going on with you? I saw you went out to the Lions Museum.
Yeah. Lions Automobilia Museum. They have put together what is quickly becoming one of the best drag racing museums. The owner has been in business for many years in the shipping business. A lot of the containers that come into the LA port and like that. And he had this huge facility, of course, and he was a big drag racing enthusiast. And Lions Drag Strip, which was right in that area back in the day, was near and dear to his heart. So he started collecting cars years ago, and they started taking up more and more of his company's warehouse space, till the point several years back that he decided to actually make it into a museum. He created a foundation, started collecting more and more, and today it is phenomenal. They've recreated the Lions Drag Strip starting line with the tower, and it had a unique drive under where the tower went across and the cars drove under the stage, and he's recreated all of that. He has the strip with the cars. He has a great event center that he has now put in so that people can do, and a lot of the car companies have already have events there because it's very well put together. There's a diorama that pays tribute to the Long Beach Grand Prix, all these Southern California type things. But the big thing this last weekend was they were celebrating Ed Iskandarian from Isky Cams, the founder who has done so much for the aftermarket automotive industry, but he was turning 102 years old, still getting around, beginning to show his age, finally. I mean, and I mean that literally. Up till a couple of years ago, he'd walk around the SEMA show and like that. But what a lot of people forget is he was the very first president of SEMA. He was the very first president of SEMA. He's the one who really lit the fuse and got people going on doing a SEMA show. And as he said it on Saturday, Matt, he said, "We were just a bunch of kids that were car enthusiasts. And we were trying to do things. And we realized that, hey, this is really becoming something." And he said, when the studios started coming to them and wanting to use their cars in movies and like that, he said they realized we got to make this a business. And that's when they put together that first SEMA show. And he said the reason he was voted in as president of the very first SEMA organization was because he missed that meeting. And so they put it up.
He got voted into it by
default. He said he didn't make the meeting, so they voted him in because it was extra work.
Sounds like there's a great turnout for the event as well.
Huge, huge number of people. And it was a ticketed event. So a lot of people that are enthusiasts of all ages, and they had a cackle fest. They had like six great top fuelers there from back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s that were doing the cackle fest. They had a car show. They had the museum open. A lot of industry people, a lot of things. And what's really cool is we did see a cross section of people. I saw people that have been in the industry for years. I saw people that were, you know, drag racers back in the day. But then I saw, young guys and young girls that were there. I saw one woman that was probably in her late 20s, rode up on a motorcycle, and she had like coveralls, like work coveralls on. And she was there just digging everything that was going on. And then I saw her jump back on her motorcycle and leave. And it was really cool. You know, I mean, we're seeing a whole new generation of enthusiasts and people getting involved.
Yeah. Well, happy birthday to Iski, a legend in this space. The Lions Museum also, you know, like you said, a cool venue, a cool place to go and check out, especially if you're a vintage drag racing fan. There's a lot of history there. And yeah, you know, Brad, you and I've been there a couple times now for some of the other events. And
even
cool
if
space.
You're not a vintage drag racing fan, you're just an automotive fan. There's so much drag racing, Matt, but there's also, he's friends with Clint Eastwood. So he has a notable amount of Clint's cars from the films he's been in, like Gran Torino. He has the actual Torino that was in the film, Bridges of Madison County. He has all of the vehicles that were in that, like the pickup truck he drove and the farm delivery truck. And he's got a huge Willys collection. If you're into Willys, he has probably about 20 of those cars there too.
Clint Eastwood, another young man still kicking it all around Hollywood. I think he's still working. He's doing a lot as well. Yeah, it sounds like a great event. Sounds awesome. I'm sure.
Cool.
Was Dave Merrick out there with you, or is he?
Heck yeah, Dave was there. Dave Merrick, the head of design for Acura, is on the board of directors for the museum.
Except it seemed like 14 hours earlier he was in Japan or something.
He was. He literally flew back from Japan, landed, he went to his house, got a quick little nap, and then showed up there. And and then you're not going to believe this. Afterwards, he wanted to go have a beer.
I'm sure he did. Yeah, sounds like a great event. And speaking of events, this past weekend was the Goodwood Festival of Speed, the hill climb event in Chichester in the UK. A cool event. They had a couple little issues this year. Friday, Saturday, Sunday event. Friday, a lot of rain, I understand. Saturday, they got weather warnings for high winds, and it was more than what they considered a safe spec for all the big tents and the like, sort of the pop-up buildings that the manufacturers and car manufacturers and stuff have. So,
well, you think about it, Matt, the rain saturates the ground, and then you have the high winds. It's just it's a volatile combination.
Right. Then it just turns to mud, and any of the stakes and stuff that are in the ground are going to come up from the ground with a lot of wind. So I believe Saturday, the event was canceled for the first time in 30 years. And then they brought it back open on Sunday. And, you know, still went on to be some very, very cool cars. And they still managed to set some records up the hill climb. Which is super impressive because it was wet a lot. It was It was seemed to be wet the whole time. Still an event that should be on your bucket list. Like we've said, if you come to California, you know, go to the Peterson Museum, definitely go to the Lions Museum. And if you make it out to any of the Goodwood events in the UK, the Festival of Speed is the hill climb event, and the Revival is the vintage racing event, which I believe is in September. And that one is the one where people kind of dress up period correct, and you get to see the most expensive cars in the world out there, and they're not holding back. They're sawing at the wheel, those guys racing. I've seen them trade paint. And you get a little bit of that at the Festival of Speed as well. Not by design, but it happens. Two cars, for example, hit some of the hay bales out there.
Yeah.
Now the headlines are like massive crash at Goodwood, and then you watch the video and you're like, there was a crash. It was not massive, and everybody is fine. There was a Porsche 911 GT1 car, which is a very, very cool car. If you watch the video on that, it's a 98 911 GT1. It looks like the rear wing broke off as he was doing the hill climb and lost traction in the rear and kind of fishtailed and slapped the hay bale and continued up the hill, but with some carnage on the back of the car.
Yeah, it was real odd because normally when a car like that, you know, it's coming in, it's the opposite way that it goes because it didn't go to the apex of the turn. It went to the inside of the turn. And so you could tell the thrust was going, the rear wheels just broke loose for a second and boom, right into the hay bale.
And he it shows you
very quickly.
It shows you how important the wings are.
Yes.
You know, and then there was a 96 McLaren F1 GTR. The McLaren F1 already being rare as it is.
Yeah, this is the F1.
And the GTR being more rare, just lost a little bit of traction into a turn and kind of nosedived into the hay bale. I immediately got a text from Goldberg when that came out because he was driving like one of the NASCAR trucks up the hill climb a few years ago, and he went into the hay bale, and his butt hurt was more than anything, just his pride. And he just felt embarrassed, but he wanted to like go home. He's like, I need to leave. I go, don't, it's done. It's over. Just enjoy yourself. You're already out here. He's like, I got to fly back to America and put my head in the sand. I was like, don't worry about it. It's going to be fine. And honestly, the F1 is probably his favorite car. I don't know if he fits in it, but it's his favorite car.
He didn't fit in it. No.
And so seeing that, and yeah, it looked like some damage to the passenger side front, maybe the front fender mirror, but by no means catastrophic. You know, certain bummers, you don't want to see that kind of stuff. Everybody seems fine. These are just such expensive cars, some prototypes out there, some cars that are just hand-built. Like we saw the Koenigsegg Jesko out there. Dario Franchini brought Gordon Murray's T50, the new fan car. And that thing's crazy to see and to hear going up the hill. Just a number of things. By the way, they roll dragsters out there, roll funny cars. They don't do like the whole thing.
Yeah.
They just do smoky burnouts off the line and put on a show for people.
It's funny though what you said though, the headlines, you know, when you're sitting in your office, you look down at your phone, it's tragedy at, you know, Fosgood.
Yeah.
You're like, oh my God, what happened? And then it's yeah, it's a tragedy for that guy who's gotta pay $1 million to repair the car, but hardly a tragedy for everyone else.
Now I saw something like come across my email saying the Rimac Navara like sets the hill climb record. You know, the all electric, all wheel drive, crazy horsepower. And as soon as I got that into my inbox, I go and I look online and I see another video going, the McLaren Solace GT set the hill climb record. So, by the time they hit send on that press release with Rimac, McLaren rolled up and beat the record. So, I mean, good for Rimac. and probably was the fastest electric car up there. But the McLaren Solus, you weren't at Pebble Beach last year, right?
I didn't make it last year, no.
So on the lawn, McLaren had a nice sort of exhibitor tent, hospitality tent set up, and they had this crazy looking video game car out there called the Solus GT. And I asked them, I was like, this is nuts. Where did this come from? And they said, literally from the video game. They're like, I don't know if it was Gran Turismo or something. And McLaren, some of the manufacturers done this where they built a concept car for the game, for, you know, they build it in the game. And it became so popular that they're like, I wonder if we can really build this as a car. And they did. And they debuted it at Pebble Beach. But
the wireframe's already there. You just hit print.
I guess so. Just hit print. So they built it, and I think between Pebble Beach and now, they went from building a concept car for Pebble that probably didn't run to something that could be potentially really fast. Yeah, then it sets the whole climb at 45 seconds, I think. Something like 45 seconds. And it was cool to see.
You got to get a box body over there and set the record, man.
You know, I kind of feel like we're close to Von Gittin Jr. doing that, because he likes fox bodies. He's done the hill climb many times. But if you want to see a really cool run, you got to watch the video of Travis Pastrana going up the hill climb in his Subaru GL family huckster that he built, with the crazy like wings, like on the fenders. When he hits the brakes, they all pop up like air brakes, like, right, you know, like, you know, Top Gun style, like, you know, the original Top Gun, F-14 hit the brakes kind of style. Plus, cause he was sliding the car around and just going all out. Like, it was such an aggressive run. It didn't look like this crazy supercar and super smooth. It looked like he was doing so much work, and he was like number two up there with like a 46 seconds going up the hill. But it's a cool video to see, because that car is nuts, and the way he throws it around, it's just a big box of a car.
Right.
You know, like the things they had to do to create aerodynamics and downforce on that car, because it's just so square and boxy. It's a cool piece. Yeah, so good.
What a great event. It really is, you know. It's there's so many aspects to that event. You know, the hill climb, the manufacturers that come out, the people that attend, you know, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and and I think they do some rally or rally cross stuff in the woods around the area. So
yeah.
I didn't get to see it much, but you hear it, and occasionally you see a car go by. But that's going on out there as well. Now, if you go to the Revival, which is the vintage race, not the hill climb, so everything is like pre-64, I believe, where the hill climb, they allow these concept vehicles and stuff to go up there. The Revival, they don't have that. But the Revival also does a vintage air show. So you can see, as you're there watching the races, you'll see vintage fighter planes and stuff flying above you. And there's a whole airfield, and they're lined up out there as well. So that's also a very cool aspect of seeing that car. And that's the one where everyone kind of dresses up. Just touching a little bit on the new car news. Hyundai Santa Fe. I like what Hyundai is doing. Hyundai's like, hey, we had a very successful SUV, and so let's launch the new one, and let's make it not look anything like the old one. This clean sheet of paper. I like Hyundai's thought of going, why do all of our cars need to look the same? Let's just make them wildly different. The Hyundai Ioniq 5, which is the kind of boxy, futuristic looking version of their EV, the Ioniq 6, which is just completely round, and it looks like from the profile, it looks like a sad face, is what I keep calling it. Because it, you know, a car is typically like swoops down in the front and kind of goes up in the back, right? Kind of has like sort of a wing effect. Right. This one goes down in the front and swoops right down in the back. It's just like a moon shape. And it just, from the side, it looks like a sad face. But the Hyundai Santa Fe, this thing's kind of cool looking. It's a three-row, it's a large three-row SUV. It's got kind of a very boxy kind of look to it. The headlight treatment has like this, like digital pixel looking H for the headlights. You kind of see it in the front grille and stuff as well. I think the front looks great. I think the profile looks great. There's something going on in the back that I guess I got to see it in person. It kind of feels like the taillights are too low, or there's not enough taillight.
It's you were just talking about that sad face. Putting the taillights so low and they're so angular like the rest of the vehicle, it gives it kind of a sad look, or like its pants are full, you know, something there. But
it kind of does. So yeah. You'll also see from the profile that they're doing this thing that they're trying to give the belt line. They want the belt line to be straight, and they want it to kind of taper upward a little bit. And what that does is reduces the glass size from the front to the rear. So the front has large glass, and then the rear door is a little smaller, and then the cargo area a little smaller. And on the tailgate, what happens is you get a smaller window on the tailgate and a lot of sheet metal instead of larger glass.
Right.
And with the smaller taillights down low, it just looks like a big slab of sheet metal. So I don't know, from certain angles or certain colors, it looks weird. And then in some, it looks fine. So I think it's one of those things that you're going to have to kind of see in person and see how it works out.
You're right. I want to see it in person because you hit it on the head, man. Pixelated. The car looks like it's you know, something that was created on a computer and done in like a pixel type of a thing.
But like 80s-ish, like Pac-Man, you know, like pixels, you know, or Tron or something. Exactly. The Ioniq 5 has it. The Ioniq 5 has like pixel looking taillights. And it definitely has sort of this Tron effect to it, you know. So they got a little bit of that in the Santa Fe. Now, I don't know if you've seen the interior photos yet.
It looks great.
Yeah. This looks really nice. Now the steering wheel definitely has like Range Rover Sport look to it. And some of the infotainment screens do as well. It's got a couple of charging pads, looks like plenty of storage going through the center console and on top of the center console. The materials and stuff all look pretty good to me. We'll see how it kind of feels, how premium it is, but this thing's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty. I wonder what, did you get any pricing on it?
There's no pricing on it yet. Yeah. It's going to be a while before it comes out. I don't even know what engine is in it. They just haven't released a lot of specs on it yet. They were just kind of teasing the thing, and I'm sure there's various trim levels. I don't know if it's going to be
a Pixel 6.
Yeah. Well, it's got a 2.5T badge, so it's looking like a 2.5 liter, you know, turbo. But I don't know if there's going to be some sort of hybrid technology or something that's going on with it as well. So, I think they're doing a more detailed launch on YouTube next month. So we'll probably get some more information about it then. But yeah, that thing, it looks pretty good.
Yeah, it does. They're doing a lot of great things over there.
Hyundai, Kia, Genesis, they're having their best year or two ever, and they're just they just keep hitting it out of the park.
And I got a big question. Polestar. You seen any Polestars driving around in your area?
I do. I see a few, but because they look like a Volvo and I like the Volvo. So I notice it when I do see them, like the Polestar 2, but I'm not seeing a lot. I was on the phone yesterday with Adam Carolla, and I was like, yeah, I just did this trip, and I go, and I was parked in Vegas in front of the new Hummer. And he's like, yeah, what's up with that thing? I haven't seen any. And I was like, I saw one in Venice, one in Vegas, and comedian ventriloquist Jeff Dunham has one. And he texted me. He's like, I got the new Hummer. I was like, sweet, bro.
I've seen like two of them down here in Orange County.
Yeah.
But that Polestar, I've seen several of them. But my big question is, we're in the industry. We know it's a Polestar. But if you don't know it's a Polestar, if you don't know that logo, they don't have any identification on that car.
Yeah.
There's no name on it.
Driving the Volvo that we talked about a week or two ago, I was like, Volvo still feels like it's not getting the attention that it deserves. And I feel the same way about Polestar. It's not getting the attention that it deserves. The reviews on the cars, Volvo and Polestar, are good. People seem to like them. They got great styling. Both Volvo and Polestar have a larger EV coming out the beginning of next year. I think it's the Polestar 3. I think it's a Polestar 3, and then Volvo's doing, I think it's like an XC60 or an XC or EX. I think it's EX90. The EX90 is their electric SUV that's going to come out next year. And then the Polestar, and that's a three-row SUV. That looks, it looks good. And then
from Polestar, a branding standpoint, when you're launching a new vehicle, even Volvo, as long as they've been around, if those cars started coming out and they didn't have any branding on them, they didn't say Volvo, you would not know they're a Volvo unless you'd been shopping for them or you're in the media or an enthusiast. And Polestar doesn't have that long heritage. They might think that that logo is so iconic that everyone's going to know, but you know, you got to build a brand. You know, the Nike swish, the Coke bottle, they all took a long time before people knew that. The Oakley-O, but you know, the Bond Speed B, to me, it's iconic. It's great, but nobody else knows. You know, I mean, it takes a long time to get that.
Polestar for sure. I think it's another one of these vehicles that you see on the concept lawn and stuff at Pebble, or they usually have a booth there. People are like, I, what is that? What is Polestar? I mean, good. That's what you want people asking, but yeah.
But you want them to search it out. If they see it on the street and they go, wow, what is that? But if they drive away and don't know what it is, oh, it's the one that's got the little star logo. Yeah.
It's got the little star logo. I think Polestar 3.
I see somebody here in LA go, it must be another Tesla. It's probably the Starling. So it's a,
Polestar 3, I think, is going to be a nice vehicle.
They're doing great stuff. Yeah.
Next year, we're going to have some pretty interesting new EVs coming out, stuff that's being announced. And like, you can go to Polestar's website and you can play around with, you know, the configurator, and you can look at all the features of the vehicle. So it's not a secret. It's just, you know, and I guess you could probably put an order in for it, but it's going to come out the beginning of next year. Yeah, it looks great. I'm down with Polestar. I drove the Polestar 1, which is actually a pretty expensive, like kind of luxury sedan.
Mm-hmm.
I got to drive, and it's fantastic. It's good looking, and it's got some cool features. I think it's got like Olin adjustable shocks that when you open the hood, you can see it all in there. But that was meant to be a flagship vehicle to sort of introduce the brand. The Polestar 2 is the small electric SUV. Polestar also came out similar to like Hyundai or Genesis that we saw at the LA Auto Show. Some beautiful concepts. They had that giant Roadster. Was it Hyundai that had the giant Roadster? Maybe it was Genesis. I don't know if you saw it at the LA Auto Show.
I remember. Did not. I don't recall.
It's like a four-seater. It's like a four-seat Roadster concept. And I don't know if they're going to make it, but that thing was gorgeous. And Polestar had one recently. Polestar had, forgot what they called it. Yeah, I'm not sure if they have it out there. But anyway, that thing was fantastic as well. So their design is great. I think they're very, very interesting cars. I'd be down to test the Polestar. But I'm also kind of want to test the Fisker. You know, Fisker started delivering his Ocean. I think it's the Fisker Ocean. It's we saw it at Pebble Beach as well. He's got some similarities in my mind to the Polestar, sustainable materials and stuff. His vehicle is made, I believe, in the factory that where they outsourced to the G-Wagon. So a little bit different approach instead of building a factory from scratch, like a lot of these startup companies kind of hustle to do, like Rivian and stuff. He outsources it, which isn't a bad idea because that factory builds a lot of high-end cars and does a good job doing it.
And it has its mechanics all worked out. You know, it really has – it's already figured it out. It doesn't have to learn on the fly.
Kind of learned the lesson, I think, with the Fisker Karma.
Yes, that was a disaster there when those cars got flooded, and you know,
and just the electric drivetrain never worked in those things. I believe Magna is the company that's going to be building the Fisker. Speaking of Fisker Karma, the EV vehicle, driving back from Vegas, I saw one on the side of the road, and I was like,
oh really?
My gosh! I was like. That is the worst car to probably drive from Vegas to LA. Like it was just plagued with problems. It's cool looking.
Now, was it a Fisker Karma or was it a Karma? You know, cause now
so being built. Yeah. And then if you remember, there was like, I keep thinking Venmo, but that's the payment system, but there was like, somebody had the vehicles and they were putting like V8s in them.
That was the guy who used to be the CEO of Chrysler, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I thought there was a gas engine.
Yeah, they were putting LS motors in them.
And I thought there was like a production version of it. I don't remember what it was called. But
I think they got a lot of those, you know, now, you know. But that's been plagued with a lot of problems.
Right. I mean, it's a cool car. It's a good looking car. Probably not my first choice to drive from Vegas to LA, given its reliability issues. So, it did look like the EV version. It looked like an original Fisker Karma. So
the CEO of Karma lives just behind me up the hill, and so I see those come down the hill all the time, different colors.
And Fisker's there. Enric Fisker is still an Orange County guy, him and his wife. Mm-hmm. And they run Fisker Automotive, which he turned into, you know, made himself a billionaire. The car's not out yet.
Yep. You talk about cars. I went last night and saw the unveiling in Orange County of the Lamborghini Rivelto, the new their newest incarnation from Lamborghini. But as impressive as the car was, when we talk about destinations when you come to California.
Yeah,
you've got to go to Newport. Lamborghini, Bugatti, McLaren. It is quite the dealership. And you get to experience all three of those brands in one place. And they also had some other supercars in there that were, you know, equally impressive. But it's quite nice. And
so this is the replacement for the Aventador. This is
Yes.
Okay. So and the Aventador is done. It's their
first electric supercar. And I got to reconnect with the CEO and chairman of Lamborghini there last night. And Stefan was there to launch this car. And I had met him once in Switzerland. It had been quite some time, but he was very proud of the dealership and the what they had there. A very good friend of mine has one on order. He has a deposit. But as he told me, he also has a Huracan Technica that he had ordered and has yet to get it because they had that problem where the first of all, they had that ship sink, if you remember. This was a while back. And those people had to be replaced first. Now, a lot of their wiring looms and like that came out of Crimea. So they're having to resource and redo things. But he said that his Rivalto is supposed to be scheduled for 25 delivery. And he's hoping that maybe by the end of the year, he'll get his Huracan.
So as you were there for the debut of that, the first production one did the hill climb at Goodwood.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I'm looking at the video. I'm not listening to it, but I'm just looking at the video. And, you know, you go to the Lamborghini website, you see all the, you know, the fancy graphics and the, you know, the renderings of the car. And yeah, that thing's pretty cool looking.
It's cool. And it looks really good from the back. You know, the positioning of the exhaust and how big and mean it looks. And it's a good looking car.
That's a sharp looking car. Very supercar-ish as well. And you're right. Like there's a wing over the back, but the wing sort of takes the shape of the exhaust tips.
And the interior, they've done some really nice things with the interior. The side, the sculpting of the side and the way it integrates up into the scoop and everything, just it really works nice. And they, you know, had a great debut of it. And what was nice was they're celebrating 60 years. So they have this nice display of every generation of Lamborghini out front. And from the newest Countach down to the four headlight car. And, you know, they had everything there that a Lamborghini enthusiast would love.
Now, this new car is a hybrid. It's a V12 still, but it's hybrid. It says over 1,000 horsepower combined. That's got to be kind of interesting when you see it, like when it shuts the engine off at a stoplight, and then when it kicks it back on, this isn't a little turbo four cylinder that you could barely hear. It fires up a naturally aspirated V12. It must pretty cool to hear and see that thing. Yeah, that's a cool car. I think they're going to be about $600,000. So hopefully your friend is doing well.
Well, obviously he's got a Huracan on order and one of those.
And wait, does he have the?
He just got a new Z06 that he absolutely loves.
Yeah, and he's got the SV, right? Doesn't he have the
Aventador? He got rid of his SV, which he regrets. He got rid of it, and then he regretted it the minute he got rid of it.
So. The Aventador SV. Yeah, that's
he was cool. going to buy an SVJ and it fell through. So now he doesn't have either. So
and his other one's on order, and or two of them are on order, the Huracan and the new one.
Right. So he went out and bought a brand new Z06 to kind of, you know, get him
fill the gap. Fill the gap while he's waiting for those other cars.
But he did say he loves that car so much that he's not getting rid of it. He said, I'm keeping it. He goes, he drove it up Highway 1 a couple weekends ago, and he said he had the best time because it was just, you know, so nice to drive. It was fast. It did everything right for him.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to wrap things up. I've got to start making my way out to Irwindale Speedway to drive some Mustangs.
Well, at least it's cooled down for you here.
Yeah, I think it's like 109 out there. So got a bottle of water, got my shorts on, and I'm ready to go. I'm going to actually stay the night out there with Ford, their program, and then drive the GTs tomorrow. But we get up at like 6 a.m. to drive the GTs. So I should be back by tomorrow night.
You get reveling at 6 a.m. to go drive the Mustangs.
Brad, thanks for joining us. The company is Bond Speed Wheels. You've heard about them before, Bond Speed Wheels. Check out the website and give us your social media. We can follow you.
You can follow me on Instagram, where I'm the most active, at Bradley_Fanshaw.
All right, there you go.
Out there.
There's also Win Brad Stuff.
There's Win Brad Stuff. There's Bradshaw Biz. There's all kinds of stuff.
There's a few. But
if you go to Bradley_Fanshaw, you'll find out about all those too.
All right, so we're going to wrap things up and listen to Shift and Steer. That's our podcast that Brad and I do with Aaron Hagar, although he's somewhere nobody knows exactly where.
Traversing the globe.
He's on his way to Alaska on his 2-month overlanding trip to Alaska. We texted the other day, and I guess we'll be able to check in with him from time to time. You think he has a beard before he left? Wait till you see that thing when he gets back.
I'm just nothing against Aaron, but I'm wondering if he's going to make it. I mean, and I don't mean make it like his car makes it or anything like that. It's just like the staying power of like, okay, now we're a month in. Maybe we should go home. You know?
Do you think you kind of throw in the towel and be like, we should start driving back? It's going to take
because, you know,
a week.
2 months out, that means we've got a long ways to come home too. So,
yeah.
But we'll see. He'll have great adventure stories to tell us.
Plenty to unpack for sure. All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you guys next week. Until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit carcastshow.com.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.